W8LFA on St. Mark 1.
W8LFA on HCLH.
Well, what's going on? Forgot to test out my my little Motorola SL7550, the one that looks like a little cell phone. I'm going to drive in today on 96 and MLK.
Very good. I was shocked to hear you. I thought you were having that issue with, I guess it's a different radio. But I figured I'd just holler back at you. I just pulled up some bait for work, and I got to handle some things. So I'm going to let you go. Sunny Freeze.
Thanks, Wade. I'll talk to you later. Yeah, this little radio is even about 2 watts, I think. So it's going to be worth a shot. But for downtown anyways, why not? So have you going to work out before I turn a second myself. 73-8-CLH-W8-LFA, I'll be clear.
W8-DOG monitoring.
K8-DCW, Harbor Springs.
K8-DIY.
This is N6WY, November 6th, Whiskey Yankee. N6WY on Statewide 1.
N6WY, K8-DIY, good afternoon. Name here is Gordon.
Okay, Gordon, I heard you call, and I didn't get a chance to pick up the radio. The MI5 DMR last heard is down, so I couldn't find out your call. and I don't have the contact list loaded in this 890 here. This 890 is giving me fits. I'm going to meet my dealer today, at least I think I am, and we're going to talk about it and see what he can do to help me out with it in terms of getting it working again. It's an Anytone 890 I'm using. I'm going through the Mount Clemens repeater. Name here is Dave, D-A-V-E.
All right, Dave. Well, thanks for picking up my call. I am on an Anytone 578D or D578, which way you want to call it, into a hot spot in my vehicle. I don't think there's any MI5 repeaters in the Big Rapids area that I could get into, so I just bring my own with me wherever I go. Sorry to hear you're having trouble programming the radio. They definitely don't make it easy.
Well, I have four other DMR radios that I have no problem with, including the 878. This is not anything like the 878, well, yes, but there's... How can I say it? It doesn't seem to be working right. Whereas the 878 works perfectly. And I can go into some details, but I will think I just hold off on it. By the way, I heard a pop in my speaker while I had to thumb my finger down on the push to talk. Did I break up any? This is N6WY.
I'll just have a new.
I did not hear any breakup on this end. You're a solid copy. My navigator keeps interrupting me. I guess it doesn't know any better, and I asked it to do that. So it keeps trying to talk over me while I'm on the air. But no signal sounds good here. I've only got the one Anytone radio, and I got two Baofeng DMR radios, and completely different on how they're programmed and how they operate. You'd think the same manufacturer would use the same software for different radios, but not the case. Sounding good on this end. How am I coming out on your end, K8DIY?
Well, I heard your GPS talking to you in the background there. It picks that up very nicely. So, your audio sounds great. Sounds like properly volume, and you're doing good here. Your hotspot's working great. So, I know what you mean. The 890 has totally different, well, it doesn't have totally different software, but it has its own CPS, and there's supposed to be coming out with a whole bunch of fixes to this latest version. The latest version came out in February, and I guess they made some mistakes, and, you know, they got to do another one. And I don't know how soon they're going to release it, but I heard a guy talking with the 890 in California. He apparently works for AECOM, and he's doing some testing on version 105, but AECOM doesn't have a release date yet for it. They're still testing it. So maybe they're going to try to get it right and not worry about doing another update for a long time. That'd be nice. Nice to have these radios where you can do an update, but sometimes I think the manufacturers rush them to the market, and they say, well, once we sell a bunch of them, we can update them and fix the problems. I think that's what's going on with this latest model of the 890.
Yeah, that's certainly a possibility. And I don't know if any phone actually builds their radios or if they're just repackaging parts from other manufacturers or other bits from companies or employing different brands back again or just selling the same radios with different software on the phone. A little bit slightly different case. I want to get a Corolla 65. I need a quick pitch up. I can't hear this. It's like a radio. Just going to wait for the radio to come up and just get rid of the radio. See how difficult it is for it to change the radio. Hey, that's part of the game, part of the motivation of the thing, figuring out what this is. Hey,
KPR.
DYI, this is SXWY. I don't know if you wrote down your windows or what, but I was able to copy everything you said, but it sounded like there's a lot of wind noise hitting the microphone. And it covered up some of your speech, but I got it all.
All right, Dave. I think my cell service may have dropped out temporarily there, and I think I'm on a new cell tower now. Nice chat with you this afternoon, and have a good rest of your day. I'll get you on the phone. That'd be great. Hey, and that sounds like there was another station there.
Yeah, okay, was it DIY? This is KAPR. Didn't quite get your name, but I heard you talking about the 890, and I have one also. I'm just curious what kind of troubles you're having.
Well, this is Dave with the 890. Dorton, he has a Anycone mobile car-mounted radio. Yes. I don't know what you call them, mobile radio, but you know, it's not handy, Dolphy. I think we talked before. I can't remember your name. My main problem is the Delta parent does a lot, if you know what I mean by that.
Okay, sorry I got mixed up. I just heard the beginning of your conversation. I had to run into a store and just came out. You're very good at film, Papa Henry and Yolima. So, I was having trouble with my 890 also on my hotspot, but what I found out is you got to make sure, if you haven't done it already, I don't know if you've done the calibrate mode, and a couple other things. If you're using the Parrot, you know, the Parrot has to be set up as a private call, not a group call. And if you're, so you got to make sure you're also, like I said, run the calibrate and make sure your BER rate is low. I'm just curious, have you done that? Go ahead, Dave.
Yes, I have. I've done all those things. It's a private call. I did calibrate. Spent a lot of time doing it. It was kind of tricky. I caught on to the fact that, the repeater's not waking up. And I immediately started of the hotspot. to Martin, see if he's still there and he has any comments. K-A-P-Y-I, this is N6-W-Y.
I am still here. Dropped off the internet again, but I am listening, so I'm not sure how my signal's coming through. That's the downside to using a hotspot instead of a repeater is you're reliant on cell phone companies. Carry on, guys. I am on the side listening, lurking in the background. K-A-T-I-Y.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I'm just getting your ID now, and you must have a relatively new ID number. So, I don't know. It's interesting. No, my hotspot is a duplex. It's got a separate transmit and receive like a repeater. So I know when I'm actually operating it, it has to be in repeater mode, but when I'm doing the VR test, I have to turn that off. So, but if I want to talk on it, I have to put the repeater back on. So, interesting. Simplex, I don't know if that's, if you just have a simplex mode, I'm not sure how that works. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I guess there's two ways of doing it. And, I know what you're talking about, putting the hotspot in the simplex mode. But I put my radio in the simplex mode and have a test channel. That is DMR Simplex, Hot Group 99, time slot 1, but my hotspot is still in the repeater mode. I just go in on the higher frequency of my radio, which is the receive channel of the receive frequency of the hotspot, and do the test that way. That way I don't have to mess with the hotspots. And I put the offset in the radio, the 890, you can put an offset into every channel. And for this radio, I only have about 25 channels in it. I just duplicated that offset for every channel. And that way, with my other radios, I don't have to, change the offset in the hotspot. My other DMR radios. So that's the reason why I did it that way. And, I can get down to less than 1% error, 0.9%, that's less than 1%, and everything works fine, providing it does recognize the radio when I go into duplex. So, when the parrot responds, sounds good. And it just takes a while to wake it up.
Okay, the other gentleman, like I said, I didn't get your name, so I don't know to you, but I'll pass it to you in a second. You said your parent is in Talk Group 99? I use 9990. I'm not familiar with 99. The other gentleman, go ahead and pass along your name. I'm sorry.
This is K-A-T-I-Y. Name here is Gordon. I'm currently mobile on Highway 131 outside Big Rapids. So heading to Harbor Freight. It's cold and rainy today, so good to go to the tool store and look for projects rather than do anything productive. Actually, now that you mentioned that calibration, I don't know that I've checked calibration on my radio against my hotspot, but as long as it's working, I'm not going to mess with it.
For Michigan 20 East, Big Rapids.
And then there goes my navigator interrupting me again. Over to you, Dave, K-A-D-I-Y.
Okay, Harden, fine business. We don't have rain here yet. I know what you're saying about 99. My hotspot is through that Brain Marks repaired, which is what you said, 310-997. And I use time slot 1. And the simplex frequency, I do have it tuned to that higher frequency, like I said. And if the parent is, if the hotspot is set to go to the, what's going on here? I got the name. Looking at a printout here. Excuse me for a minute. Let me just see. What did I do? I'm going to turn it back to you, KAPR, this is 26WY.
All right, very good. Well, I'm just about where I got to be. So I'm going to have to pick up this conversation later, see what's going on. But, I mean, my 890 seems to work well. I've got the NXDN feature working on it, and I actually use it kind of for my work, too. I work at a place that uses NXDN, so I like using that. It's kind of neat. All right, I'm just pulling in where I got to be, 7-3, over to, was it Gordon or Norton? I didn't quite get it. I'm a little, got a little noise going on here in the car. This is KAPR, sorry, 7-3.
KAPR, KAPRY, Phil. Good chatting with you this afternoon, and have a pleasant rest of your day. I am almost destinated as well, so I'm wrapping up with this roundtable, but it's been pleasant chatting with everyone along the drive here. Over to you, Dave, for a finalist, KAPY.
Okay, KAPYI with KAPR, Phil, signed also. And I'm going to have to look at my ink on here and see. I'm sure I am using a talk group. I am positive. It's just the frequency I'm using is a simplex frequency with time slot 1. And transmit and receive are the same. So this is N6WY saying 7-3. KAPR, this is N6WY. You still there, Phil? I saw a station come on and it was a little bit of audio. There was not enough audio to hear. N6WY, it was another one.
KC8MXT missile. NADVF mobile.
NADVF KEWJ.
What's up, Rick? How you doing?
Good, hanging in there. How about yourself?
Yeah, about the same. Can't believe it's only Tuesday.
I've been playing around some with that Athlon ballistics calculator there. I kind of like the darn thing.
That's a 1-6, yeah?
Yeah, but that's still in the safe there. I've been playing around with the Ballistic app from Athlon. It's quite nice.
Oh, their app. I didn't know they had one. You know, I've gone between a few of them, and I, for some reason, just stick with Applied Ballistics because that's kind of what, well, for one, that's what my binoculars run on. I have no choice. But for two, I've got so much dope on that app that it's hard for me to switch.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. I loaded one many years ago, a Strelec Pro, written by a Russian rifleman kind of thing. And it's so intuitive, yet you don't really need a manual or anything. You can load it all up and run with it. And I got so much junk in there, same thing. I kind of default to that one all the time. But it'll Bluetooth with all the weather stuff, you know, wind and temperature and the humidity and all that kind of stuff. But the Athlon, if you get the, you know, the Garmin's got that Doppler radar chronograph, and then Athlon built pretty much the identical one for $100 cheaper, and it Bluetooths over to the app, so all the data goes right into the app right away kind of thing. It's really interesting.
You know, I've had that Garmin Zero in my cart so many times, but I haven't had any reason to buy it because all of my stuff is the same. But I did not know that Athlon made one. I'll have to check that out. But it's funny how there's all these different electronic gadgets for shooting, and how they all cost a fortune. I don't know if you've got a Kestrel, but I went down that rabbit hole, too, and quickly realized I'm not shooting near far enough to worry about my windage.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't buy a Kestrel. I bought, I can't remember what it was. It was like $70 or something like that. But Oh, what a piece of junk. It takes about 24 hours for it to actually accurately read the temperature. You have to put it outside the day before. So needless to say, it's buried around here somewhere collecting dust.
Yeah, I did something similar. I bought the 200 model Kestrel. I don't know what the actual model name is, but it was like $150. It wasn't crazy. And if you want just an anemometer, whatever the hell it is, just a wind meter, it works great just for that. But it's not like the Kestrel 400s or whatever, the X400s that actually have ballistics calculators in them. It just kind of tells you the wind speed, which is fine. You know, it gives me an idea of how much Kentucky windage I need to play with.
Yeah, exactly. The wind portion of the one I bought seemed to work okay, and I was just amazed that, you know, I'd look at the leaves and, you know, stuff going on, and I'd take a good guess and then get the wind meter out, and I wasn't even close.
Like I said, that's the beauty of shooting the same stuff forever, like my 17, man. I know how to 150 in pretty much any wind condition, when I should and should not shoot, and if I do shoot, how much I got to hold.
Yeah, that's another thing about the Strelick Pro and the Avalon Ballistic. You can pick the reticle. Like the Strelick Pro's got, geez, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of reticles in there. And the Avalon's got mostly their stuff, except generic boy and mill stuff there. But you run the calculator, and then you tap a little icon that shows the reticle kind of thing, and it pops up the looking through the scope sort of at the reticle. And it puts a red dot where you should be holding it, you know, looking through the rest. So it's kind of neat.
That's what I was going to say. I used to use Strelock. I had the paid version, and then the whole Russia-Ukraine thing happened, and then they took it off the App Store. So now I had to switch to AB.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I know. That really kicks me off because I got a tablet over here I wanted to load it on. And then I found out about that kind of thing. And luckily, I've had the same phone for a long time, since before the war started. So I got it loaded on there. But when this phone dies, I don't know what I'm going to do now. I guess I'm starting to slowly re-enter it into the Avalon. We'll see what happens. That one's a free one.
Yeah, that's when I decided I'm going to make the jump. So I paid like $30 for Applied Ballistics. There's also, that's what it's called. It's Kestrel Lite. For that cheap Kestrel that I have, and it's got its own calculator, but like it doesn't do rimfire, it only does certain calibers, it only has certain models. I don't even know if it has G1 in it. So that's when I was like, okay, I'm going to get the AB app and play with that, and unfortunately, I already had all my profiles for when I bought my Vortex Series. I don't know if you've seen those binoculars, but they're rangefinders, and they have AB on board, so I can actually sync my profiles from my phone to my binoculars, and then it tells me my adjustment in the glass without having to look at my phone, because I had gotten so sick of, like, dope cards in my pocket or on my gun or whatever, just trying to figure out what my holds were or what I was dialing to. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to just try this out. Man, I fell in love.
Yeah, that sounds pretty nice. And you only got two hands, so how many things can you hang on to? You know, a phone, range card, the rifle. Yeah, I'm there with you. The less you need, the better. I've been running. I've been kind of interested, slowly, you know, adding more stuff to the Avalon app, and then I'm checking the numbers between Strelick Pro and Avalon, and boy, they're right on the money.
Well, you're actually in a good spot then, because if you have known good data and you can cross reference it with something else, then I'd say you're good there. Just keep moving it over and double checking it. You're probably gonna be all right. But, that's where I was, right? So I had my vinyl harness with my rangefinder in a pocket, and then my rifle either on a tripod or, like, on a bipod or whatever, depending on how I was shooting and hunting. So I would, the sequence was glass, spot, then I have to range it, then I have to pull on my phone and reference the dope, and I'm like, this is crazy. I got to touch three things. If something's looking at me, I'm never going to be able to pull this shot off. So now it's glass, range, dope, all in one go. I dial, and I can take my shot, and around here, that's really not an issue. You know, it's Michigan, so you're not shooting that far anyway. But if you're one of those people that just hunts in the blind and you've got a 100-yard, 75-yard shot, you know, you don't have to worry about it. But I like shooting stuff as far as I can away, so that really cut down the time I needed to spend prepping a shot.
You know, I kept saying the same thing. It's Michigan, you know. We're lucky deer hunting and stuff, but we can see 75 yards kind of stuff. But there was a lot of places around Lapeer where I used to go in the evening and watch deer out in the soybean fields kind of stuff. And they'd be hanging around the front of a woods 450 yards away. So that's kind of a little out of, the distance that I've been shooting anyway kind of thing. And I don't really have accurate long-range stuff. I did go to a 600-yard range quite a few times with my 308, but that was a lot of years ago. And I haven't got the opportunity to get good range dope on all the stuff yet. But the short-range stuff, anyway, I checked the one program against the other, and they both put out the exact same info. So they must use exactly the same calculation and the same drag model.
I think the most important thing is whatever you do, you just stick to one, or like you're doing, you're verifying one from the other because you know you're not going to be able to use the one eventually. I think where you start running into issues, like we were just saying, they all use different calculators and different models and come to, you know, they're close, but they might be a tenth of a mil off or a half a mil off or whatever it may be. Yeah, that makes a big difference when you start shooting outside of 150 yards where things start growing exponentially. So stick with one and run it, and you should be fine.
Yeah, there was one. I was running them both at 600 yards, and the Athlon was a half a minute different than Strelec. And I was like, well, a half a minute at 600 yards, that's 3 inches. That's not acceptable. So I just kept digging, and I had the bullet length wrong in the Athlon settings there.
Jesus, it's raining again. Sorry, I was texting when you were coming back to me there, trying to get my expense report approved, and I looked up and it's raining.
Yeah, it's been spitting rain on and off over here. I went out to have a cigar there an hour or two ago, and just as I stepped out the door, it started raining. But lucky, it only went for about, less than a minute, I don't think.
You know, I stopped checking the forecast because it's wrong 90% of the time, so I just see what happens throughout the day.
Yeah, me too. I can do just as well going outside and looking at the sky in every direction, you know. Make your own forecast. But it's nice to look at the radar. I use the radar instead of, you know, the forecasting I don't pay attention to, but the radar I do because it's nice to be able to see what's coming way further than I can see.
It's not all it's good for is real time, but if you want any sort of forecast, roll the dice and take a guess.
Yeah, and I always wonder what they consider real time. You know, I got four programs, and I match the output. I check the output of all four, and come up with a composite kind of thing. But one of them's like usually about an hour off. You know, the data's from an hour ago.
You know, as someone that's in the technology field, you think I wouldn't be so stubborn and I would use whatever option's best. But for some reason, I just keep using the default Apple Weather app, which is supposed to be off of the Weather Channel, which doesn't make sense either because that one's never accurate. So that's pretty much where I get my weather information and news from, and that's probably why it's always wrong.
Yeah, I started out not believing any of them, so I ended up loading up four of them, and I kept looking, you know, between the four. So now I take quick looks at the temperature and the wind and the humidity at each one and the radar, and then I get a good idea of what all of them, because, you know, they get all the weather from the NOAA, N-O-A-A, and then their local news stations and meteorologists start adding their little 2 cents. Well, I think it's going to do this, and that's where the forecast stuff comes in. So I ignore that. I just want to see the data from NOAA.
Yeah, right. I don't want your philosophical approach. I want to know what the damn radar says.
Exactly. It doesn't seem like rocket science, so even a dummy like me can figure it out.
At ATDF. I always joke and say, man, I should be a weatherman, then I could be wrong half the time.
Yeah, right. Half the time or more. And nobody bought it, and you still keep the jab.
You know what I should do this weekend, Rick, is I should probably go get that turkey that I bought a tag for.
I was just going to ask you that. You got your turkey yet? It's funny because I go out every morning to feed the cat, and like 5 o'clock or so, a little bit after 5, it's just a little bit early yet, but then by about 5:20, 5:30, they start gobbling up a storm kind of thing, and they go just till daylight, and once it gets daylight, just after sunup, they quit. You don't hear another gobble out of them the rest of the day.
Yep, they sound off in the morning to link up, and then they're done for the day, and they go roost at night. I don't think they make really any noise when they're going to roost at the end of the day either.
No, I've seen them a couple of times. They went to the Pontiac Lake State Range over there, and they don't open until 10 o'clock, you know. So a couple of times we went out in the spring, I'd go out there at, 9:30 or so, and then they open the gates, and we'd go on up and start getting set up and stuff. And once the people start showing up and, you know, moving around, making noise, they hear a couple of gobblers fly out of the trees where they were nesting and onto the range and wandering around. I thought, boy, it's pretty late in the morning for them to now just be getting up.
Where is that range, by the way?
You know where the Pontiac Airport is? It's sort of right up 59. The west of the Telegraph.
I'm not super familiar with that area, but I think I might know the general area that it's at.
Yeah, if you were to head up west on 59, and it runs right into Pontiac, like downtown Pontiac, and then it goes through Pontiac and then out the other side, west side kind of thing, and it starts getting into a little bit more suburb rather than city kind of thing. And then there's the airport on the right-hand side. You go to another road, there's a light there, and then there's Pontiac Lake, and the Pontiac Lake recreation area is right there. You make a little right, and it's right down the street just a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, I imagine that's probably pretty close for you then, right?
Yeah, that's the closest one for me. I've been going there for a long, long time, and I know the range officers real well, and, they're they're real hardcore on safety and all that kind of stuff. But if one for them guys, now they see me coming there, they come help me with my gear, carrying over to the bench. And then one of them will go down and put my targets up for me because they know I'm too slow. If I go down myself, I gotta stop on the way back kind of thing. And everybody else is ready to go and waiting for me to get there. So they go down and hang the targets for me. Otherwise, I'd have to quit going.
Oh, that's nice of them. Do you shoot at Ball Mountain at all? I've had mixed experiences with those range officers.
Yeah, a long time ago when I was in the Oxford, Lake Orion area there. And yeah, that's kind of an iffy place there. There's just all kinds of weird people show up there. I've never had that problem at Pontiac Lake. Had some bikers out there one time that were just going crazy there, and the range officers were just kind of ignoring it. Kind of, they didn't want no part to try to deal with it.
Okay, well, that's my experience, so I'm glad I'm not the only one. I swear I've seen more AKs at that range than I have bolt guns.
Oh, yeah. In fact, it reminds me, when I was going there, I was an accuracy snob, a bolt action, a snob. I was looking down on all the semi-autos and AKs and ARs and all the other kind of stuff. And as far as I was concerned, the high-accuracy bolt actions were the only way to go kind of thing. And then some fellas at the guy and his wife at the LaPierre Sportsman's Club got me hooked on my first AR. And, well, the rest is history.
Oh, I didn't tell you yet. So I might have told you about that Geisley Super Duty that I once upon a time had. Well, I kind of started my own side gig for website development and application development and things like that. And I'm doing some work for the guy, my buddy, that I sold it to. So instead of cash changing hand, I should be getting that thing back in my possession.
Oh, cool. What was it?
It's a Geisley Super Duty pistol, 10.3 and 5.56 Luna Black. And it's got a Law Tactical folding stock on it. It's got, it's got R-stock and hand stops. It's like the most, it's beautiful. Like, it's basically a GI clone, aside from the fact that it's a 10.3 and it's a pistol. But it's a beautiful piece of kit, and I regretted selling it the second I sold it. So I'll be getting that back, thankfully, and I'm hoping it's got a Cloud Defensive Rain 3.0 on there with their tape switch, and what else do they have on it? I don't know if I got backup irons on it. And a Holosun Ames Red Dot. I don't know if you're familiar with those, but those are pretty sweet, too.
Oh, excellent. at least you're going to get one of your babies back there. I would probably give a finger or two for a few of the rifles back that I sold, mistakenly sold.
I've bought and sold a lot, and that's the only one that's truly been like, oh, why did I get rid of that one?
Yeah, I had a Sacco Hunter and a 270. What an awesome rifle that was. And then a Mountain Eagle Magnum Research, Mountain Eagle. That was their first version of when they first decided to get into rifles there. And they had a custom gunsmith design the rifle. And up until the time they came out with their ad, they were going to only build 1,000 of them. And up until the time they came out with their ad, I was kind of looking for a gunsmith to build exactly what they were selling. So I ended up buying one of those. But I got in some financial trouble. I had to pay a bunch of medical bills. And so away they went.
And ADF. I had no idea that Magnum Research made rifles.
Yeah, they, you know, they they got their fame with the Desert Eagle and, you know, the pistols kind of thing, and then they decided to get into rifles, and that Mountain Eagle was their first shot at it. What an awesome rifle that was. It used a Sacco, a modified Sacco action, instead of having the tapered cuts in the top of the receiver like they use in Europe for a lot of their scope mounts. It was drilled and tapped to a Remington hole pattern kind of thing, and Krieger match grade cut rifle barrel, and HS Precision stock with a, I think it had the V-block, you know, under the receiver, so it was always in the same exact place all the time. You didn't even really need to bet it.
So it's like a factory custom, basically. That's my own ignorance for not knowing that they ever made rifles. So I'm assuming you can't find those anymore.
Used ones. I've seen used ones like at Williams over there in Davison. Last time I was there, which was quite a while ago, they had one or two over there. Let's see. I don't think they're still making, you know, they claimed they were only going to make 1,000 of them, which is the reason I bought it. I thought, well, even if it's not as good a gun as I think it's going to be a collector's item pretty soon, you know, before too long. I think they made a couple of 1,000 of them, actually. I think my serial number was like 640 or something like that.
Man, that's a bummer. It's a bad idea to get rid of it. You come across a low serial number like that, you want to hang on to it.
Yeah, I had a habit, I think I told you, of I had a caliber that I was going to hunt with, like the 7 Mag. That was in a 7 Mag. I always had a backup rifle, you know, so that I could take both rifles, and if something happened to one, I'd have another one to keep hunting with, kind of thing. I was going to sell the backup to a friend up north. He wanted it for his kid, you know, and he goes, yeah, but I wanted one too, a 7 Mag also, so that we can both be using the same ammo. And he didn't want to buy the one rifle he wanted to buy both rifles instead of just the one, you know, and I was like, man, it was like pulling teeth. They're trying to get me to sell my kid, you know. But I didn't have a choice. I had to do it.
I've been in those situations a couple of times, not necessarily with guns, but where this is for sale, and I'm like, well, I want that too. And it's like, well, and then they pay you more than you want, and it's hard to say no.
Yeah, and the worst thing, that guy and his kid, they did not take care of their weapons at all. They'd pull them out of the closet or come out to go bird hunting kind of thing, and there'd be rust all over the barrels. And they were laying on a out in a barn somewhere, not even in a case for the last 10 years kind of thing. So I was like, oh, man, that rifle's too nice for them guys to have.
Well, sounds like my grandpa, when he was around, I would find his, he'd keep scope stuff even. He'd keep it in like a cheap Plano, or what's the other one? Oh, not Plano. Damn it, it'll come back to me. Just those cheap plastic cases with, like, foam, or not even foam back there, like some weird fabric. You just keep them in there under the bed.
Yeah, I was just writing down a recipe today from a desiccant. pretty nice, fairly cheap desiccant you can make. And so I can put in the safes and possibly used to store ammo, but I think I'm pretty good on how I store my ammo.
You just reminded me, when I was buying all my safes, I went through that whole, should I buy a heat rod, should I do desiccant, what do I do? And I do have some wooden stocks, so I was like, you know what, I'm just going to do the desiccant. I don't want to risk cracking my wood stocks. And I couldn't tell you the last time, I don't think I've baked those desiccant cans since I moved to this house. But with that being said, I've always got a hygrometer on top and in the safe, and it's never over 50% humidity. So I guess I shouldn't, and everything's oiled.
Yeah, see, I'm the same. I never got into it at all because, you know, something like every month, every other month, they all come out anyway and get wiped down and re-oiled and, you know, played with a little bit and then put back away.
I got one rifle that's starting to get a little bit of surface rust on it because the bluing's worn off from it being shot on it so much. And honestly, I'm kind of okay with it. It's not to the point where it's like it's spreading and getting worse. It's just like a couple spots where either my greasy hands when I put it away or just scratches or wear. There's this tiny little bit of like you can rub it. It's like brown powder. And it comes off with oil, but then you can see bare metal underneath of it. And I think that gun's so beat up, that's my workhorse, so it's like, you know what, this is, it's like a look for that gun. I don't want to make it better, but, and I got some safe cleans that I don't want to get rusty.
You know, I just wrote down another recipe off of YouTube there for a rust preventative, and if even half of what they say is true, it's just an awesome deal, and it's pretty simple. It's tannic acid. Black tea bags. You go to any grocery store and get the black tea bags. You use 6 black tea bags, 2 cups of water, boil them for about 30 minutes, you know, kind of thing, so it's really, really, really kind of black. And that's pretty much it. You rub your if you got rust on them, you leave it on it, you know, flaky stuff, real, you know, you got to get that off kind of thing. But it has a chemical reaction with the rust kind of thing, and it won't rust anymore. I mean, you'll probably go to your grave and not have to do any more rusting, oiling, I mean.
I've never heard that, but if I get to the point where it's bad enough, I'll give it a shot.
Just use Rust-Oleum.
I'll send you the link to it.
You guys double there a little bit. Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon. I'm about to go into the pit over here at M59 and Hall Road. Or M59 and Van Dyke, I mean. So let me know if I fade out. I was just saying, use Rust-Oleum.
Hello, good afternoon, David. How you doing? Yeah, I guess you could use Rust-Oleum kind of thing, but it's something you got to repeat using all the time. This stuff is sort of like a one-time deal, and you're good to go. I'm chomping at the bit to try it out. In fact, I got to run down to the store and try some of this and put it together and see what happens. But I don't have anything with any rust on it. Apparently, it's been a recipe that's been around for a couple thousand years, and the firearm industry has been kind of burying it.
Well, yeah, they can't make any money charging you for products that don't really work. You know, I'm still the old school mentality where you use Butch's Boreshine, Croil, and CLP.
You guys continue. I'm dodging traffic over here. Yes, he does.
Hey, good luck with that, David. I mean, even when you're careful, it seems like you're a target out there at this time of day. And Dakota, I'm the same way. I use all three of those myself.
Oh, and I can't forget Gun Scrubber. I like Gun Scrubber for just getting stuff back down to bare metal before I oil it.
Yeah, well, I had another. Sorry, David. Go. Oh, that's right. I had another bore paste. God, whose bore paste was that? Shoot, I can't remember now. I have to look it up.
Flip?
Oh, I haven't seen the doggone thing in a while. It's buried in some cleaner. A lot of the match shooters were using it, kind of. It's a little bit abrasive. Not real bad, but, you know, it's especially good if you got, heavy carbon and all that kind of stuff in it.
Yeah, it's not Flip. I forgot that's, like, a pretty abrasive metal polish. I know what you're talking about, though. Does it come in, a small 1.5-ounce round plastic white container?
Yes, exactly.
Yep, I have one. I don't remember the name either. I used it on my old 17 trying to bring the groups back, but the gun was just shot out.
I would do the same. I really dislike cleaning. You can actually overclean and mess up barrels too. And I would not bother cleaning until I started noticing the groups falling apart, and then it was time for a cleaning. And then I wanted something that would do it fairly quickly.
I'm going to have to check when I get home what the hell that stuff's called now.
Yeah, it's bugging the heck out of me, too. I'm going to have to find that tin around here somewhere.
Yeah, I feel it's about how I did stuff for a long time. I've been pretty lax lately, but like we talked about the other day, I realized that I don't need to be cleaning them as much as I have been. My 17's probably due for a preventative because I haven't done it in probably 2 years, but yeah, I was down to, I use this rod for this gun, this drag, you know, I would buy these brushes, these patches. I mean, I was very, very anal about it.
Yep, when I first started too, same thing, I thought, well, who's the most precision shooters that I know of and how do they do things? So that turned out to be the bench press crowd. So I started attending matches and, you know, talking to those guys and reading and finding out what they do. And I was just constantly cleaning. You shoot five clean, you know, maybe get up to shoot 20 maybe. And that was hard. Seemed hard to do at the time, then clean kind of thing. But then I found out the factory bores, they were a little bit rough to begin with. It would take a bunch of rounds just to booger up the bore a little bit, and then they'd calm down and start shooting accurate again. So constant cleaning wasn't doing me any good.
That was one of the things that it was a gotcha for me for a long time. I'm like, man, I clean the gun and it doesn't shoot good, and then I shoot it and it shoots fine, and I finally put two and two together that my cold bore on a non-foul barrel was a different POI. So then I think I told you, I just will send a couple of random stuff or, you know, close shots so I don't have to worry.
Yep, I was doing the same thing. Depending on the rifle, some of them you shoot, it'd take maybe five, after a real thorough cleaning there, it'd shoot maybe five rounds and then the accuracy would come back again. And then some of them I'd have to shoot 15 rounds or something before the accuracy started coming back again. So anything that I was going to be deer hunting with, I made sure it wasn't clean. And it had at least a few rounds sent down to it before I stepped out in the woods.
Jesus, I need to call this guy across from my house. It owns this storage complex he's building. It's about, I don't know, 900 yards away from my house, loaded with turkeys. Speaking of, I got a call coming in, and I'm pulling in the driveway, so I'm going to jump out. I might be out here in a little bit, but if not, I'm sure I'll catch you tomorrow. I will listen out. Have a good night, 10 8 BBM.
Okay, catch you later, young man. Get to that phone and get after them turkeys. Catch you later, KAWOJ.
Probably be a patient listening.
Kilo Echo 8, Lima Alpha X-ray, monitoring, statewide 1.
NAWRO, good afternoon, Dean.
NAWRO, KAWAX, how you doing, Tim?
Pretty darn good. I think I heard you this morning. Hope you got some sleep today.
Yeah, I had a short QSO with Sean in Dakota this morning on FBI. I ended up getting a cheap 3D printer, so I made some mic mounts and stuff for the car, and I was kind of playing around, and I took the kids to school.
Well, that sounds fun, the 3D printer. And, yeah, that's right. You guys were actually talking about taskbook stuff. That's funny. Yeah, it was a good day today. We just, I'll give you an update. We connected the 7.2 to the GM repeater for tomorrow night's net, for the D2 net. I mean, we have the ability to do that now, thanks to Sean and Wally. And John and I tested it, so that's different. And you know what? That's probably going to happen twice a month now, because they have it every other Wednesday.
Oh, that's awesome! So the D2 was that originally on GMAR?
Correct. You know, still relatively new this year type thing, but it is hosted on the GMAR ARC. And, you know, from time to time I checked into it. It's what they call a roll call net, because they'll just go county by county, and then they'll use, they'll say leadership first for Macomb, and then, you know, we'll check in. And then we'll come around again, it'll be membership, and then the third time around to Macomb would be, you know, any hams that would like to check in from Macomb County. So it was always on the GM. And I can hit it from the base, but, of course, the idea was to attach our repeater 7.2 to it as well to get coverage from the north. And I think it's going to work. I mean, like I said, John and I tested it briefly, so there's no reason why it wouldn't. You know, it's similar to us connecting up to Central Michigan, and, you know, it just works. So, but they do have some rules. You got to watch your signal, and you got to monitor it, and you got to have your finger over the disconnect button. So one of these days, when you flip shifts, we'll show you how to do it, and then you can take a shift yourself and watching that connection. It's kind of fun. So it's something different is what it is. N-A-W-R-O over to K-E-A-L-A-X.
That's really cool. Unfortunately, I'll be working tomorrow. But not every Wednesday. I don't think every Wednesday I work, because some of them I'm available for. So, but that'll be nice, because I can get in the car, and if I crank the power up, I can hit the GM repeater. But yeah, that's actually really cool. I think it'll make it more achievable for other members, especially HT users.
Yeah, I think that's the goal there, and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, because we haven't. I want to get the first successful full net tomorrow in the books. But that would be the idea. I mean, if you were on duty and you get a break, go out in the parking lot, even with an HT, because, you know, you're right there by the Clem, and you should be able to get in clean.
I think that's a really cool step forward, honestly. It's a good step forward.
Well, it coincides with the idea to work more closely with D2, all the six counties of D2. So, you know, rather than go it alone or, you know, maybe get involved in the state. And I'm always doing the state net on Sundays, but, you know, I like the D2 push. That sounds good.
Absolutely. I agree. But, Tim, I just got in the car. I've got the wife, the kid, and her boyfriend in the car. We're going to the Anchor Bay Award ceremony, because she got herself a cord, so they're doing a separate award ceremony before graduation. So I'm gonna say 7-3s and step out here. I'll be waiting for your final. This is KEALAX. Back over to NHWRO.
Well, copy that bit of good news. Congratulations. Very good, Dean. This is November 8th, Whiskey Romeo Oscar. I'll be clear as well. Y'all have a good evening.
The daughter said thank you for the congratulations. Have a good one, Tim. KEALAX, I'll be clear.
Sorry, Dean, I think I stepped on you. KEWOJ.
WOJ, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry about that. It got kind of quiet. I thought you'd already cleared out, and I jumped on, and then when I had the keys, you were talking, so I apologize.
Yeah, no issues. My daughter was listening to the conversation, and she had said thank you to Tim, so I keep back up. So my apologies. This is 28 LAX. I'll be clear on your final.
Okay, congratulations to you and your daughter there. Have yourself a good, safe night, and we'll catch you later. KEAWOJ.
KCAMXG listening.
I'm telling you how in the world.